going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And welcome you to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt Redbird and A Medlock One on Twitter. It's not been, you know, we missed last week because there really wasn't anything to do talk about. We'll miss next week because of different things, and there's probably not a whole lot to talk about. But this week, thankfully, we got a little bit. We finally had the postseason press conference. And Alan, well, it gave us something to talk about, but I don't know that we learned a whole lot from it.
No, it was funny. I didn't even really send out any Twitter direct messages or, you know, text messages to my buddies or anything like that, because it was about as vanilla as you can get. And I expected that. They're going to be, to make any moves or anything, they're going to have to keep everything pretty much close to the vest and be creative, because, you know, roster or payroll limitations and, you know, the roster they're staying. This is all making out right now to be a situation where they're going to play some internal options first. And I know that's not what people want to hear, but a lot of these early season, it's not even a Cardinals fan issue. It's kind of a national outlook, is that they're not going to be very active in any of the free agent markets, and, you know, the trades, what they may need may be unlikely because they're not going to move guys that are unmovable, essentially. But that all adds up to them being pretty vanilla, and it's probably something we should get used to even after these GM meetings next week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of put out a tweet. I said, well, Adam Wainwright's coming back, and that's it. That's the winner. You know, it feels like it's not quite to that extent, but it's really pretty close. You know, you're right. They're not going to go out and say, hey, we're going to go make a splash for Anthony Rendon or Garrett Cole, or we're going to spend money. I do think they have in the past been more open about the possibility of them spending money. Sure. Than they were this time around, even though in the past they haven't actually spent that money, but they've at least been open to that, you know, saying we've got some payroll flexibility, which is one of those big keywords. That didn't seem to come out of this one. They have said, I feel like, and again, without really digging into, you know, finding quotes and stuff from past conferences, but it feels like that in the past they've maybe said, we're going to look at, you know, be creative about how we're going to, you know, improve our roster and things like that. And I didn't get that feel out of this either. Now, I didn't watch the press conference. I just, you know, I kind of caught it as it was going on and on Twitter and things like that. But my feeling really was they plan on this roster. What, last year we were talking about, you know, how they needed to do it, or maybe the last couple of years, how there was going to be some roster churn and there was a lot of people. It really feels like, except for Marcell Ozuna, pretty much everybody that we saw at the end of 2019 is going to be there at the beginning of 2020, and there's not going to be a whole lot of new faces there, which is an interesting, if not unexpected, approach to a team that made it to the NLCS, but obviously had some flaws along the way.
It's interesting how you took the words out of my mouth, is how we kept thinking for the last couple of seasons, be it off-season, trade deadline, off-season, trade deadline, that they were going to clean up some of the issues in the outfield because they just have an abundance of players that could possibly be fourth outfield type guys that we would never get a chance to see what they were going to do. And the mystery turned into, there was even a chance to where one of those, being O'Neill, probably could have played a lot more through the second half of the season this year, and didn't after he came back from an injury. And I just, I point him out as an example, because there's probably, and Siri had her own idea. I'm sorry that I picked up. But, it's funny that all of it built to this and I'm actually kind of okay with it being that, okay, finally we're going to see what some of these guys can do. And I'm hoping that this will be the one to where they start the first half of the season and play these guys and stay committed to playing these guys, then make the changes that they deem necessary because they figured out what they are. And it's so easy to say when we're sitting here like, hey, finally, if I completely think Ozuna's moving on. I think you can start phasing into that fourth outfielder situation with Fowler, and there's going to be some at-bats for guys. But even then, even the four guys that I'm thinking of on the, just off the top of my head, you know, there's probably two or three more being Garcia popping to mind in Memphis that they're going to need time as well. And the logjam isn't necessarily going to relieve itself that quickly. So it's funny how after all these years of thinking, okay, they have an abundance of these guys, maybe they can move to add somewhere that they didn't do it. So now it's going to be, all right, they're probably going to be starting lineup type situations. It's funny that this is happening after an NLCS run to me. I don't know why it seems odd, but like I said, I mean, there's a part of me that, and I'm actually all right with this. I mean, at least we're going to clean up some of the mystery about what some of these guys can do.
And I get that. But boy, I feel like we had this discussion last year, even after Paul Goldschmidt was acquired, this idea of putting your foot down, you know, putting the pedal down, just going from being a divisional contender to being a World Series contender or a World Series favorite. And, you know, last year it was the idea of, yeah, if you put Goldschmidt and Harper on this team, this with the pitching staff it had, they're going to be one of the favorites for the World Series. And I think they probably would have been. I mean, we saw the fact that, you know, even if Bryce Harper didn't have a Bryce Harper type year, you know, he had a better year than a lot of the outfielders. I mean, it would have made, could have made it a difference in the regular season, could have made a difference in the playoffs. Who knows? I mean, and that's a lot of ifs, I know. But it feels like this year you could go get a Gerrit Cole and just double down on this pitching performance. Yeah. And that would at least make you the divisional favorite. Because I'm not 100% sure. I think they probably are the favorites, but I'm not 100% sure that they're going to be a overwhelming favorite, at least going into next year. I mean, the way the roster's sit now, I mean, do you think that's, I mean, if you look at nationally, and I mean, and looking at things overall, would you think they're the favorite? And would you say they're easily the favorite?
I would think that they're the favorite without a doubt. And I thought that toward the end of the season last year, I said, there's one reason why they're always going to be the favorite at this point is because of Flaherty. That, you know, and I think that they're, you could even put Hudson in that conversation now of, hey, they're going to be pretty good because their pitching's good and their pitching's young. And that's one of the reasons why I think you can feel that way. The resurgence of Wong probably adds to that. I don't know if resurgence is even the word that needs to be used on him, but that's a fairly young superstar that you know, that's up and coming. And these are the things that you can kind of equate to, and Goldschmidt, and now I can get a little lost into this, but I think that they're the best team in the division mainly because of the pitching. But I did want to backtrack on this and say that if I do feel like they make a splash this year and go get somebody, I don't think it would be at a Cole level, but a Keuchel wouldn't surprise me with them. I don't think they were completely – I don't think that they were – it was a situation to where they were completely blown away by Keuchel last year due to probably some contract demands and dealing with Boris. And I'm not so certain that they were – after seeing him twice in the division round, that they were that sold that may be something that they want. And that's kind of putting words in their mouth. But I could see it being that level of free agent that they go get because they think that Martinez is better suited for the bullpen. I'm not so certain that's the case. I don't feel that way. I wish they could just say, Martinez, you're going to start. This is how we're going to do this. And I know that the caveat is the health issues, which I'm not so certain that I even really believe. But if they were to make a move to where we keep hearing how bad the offense is, I think that the move would probably be for that, for to bolster that rotation. Because I think that they feel like it. They've even said, you pitch, you win. And that's the direction I think that they would go.
I will say that coming out of the press conference, it does sound like Carlos Martinez is going to be a starter. I mean, they said Carlos is going to train to be a starter, and they want him to be a starter. But again, it is that health issue that if – and I think we also have to take into account that, you know, Carlos Martinez threw 40 innings this year, 42, something like that. Is he going to be able to give you 180 to 200 quality innings next year? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he could ramp it up that much, especially, you know, when we deal with the shoulder issue and things of that nature. So, I mean, I think right now the starting rotation for next year is Flaherty and Michaelis, and Hudson and Martinez and Wainwright, assuming Wainwright, you know, like Wainwright wants to come back. It sounds like they're working on a contract. It's going to get done. So that's your five. But boy, I tell you though, I mean, the Cardinals won this year because their pitching staff was really good and their defense was outstanding. And their base running was much better, you know, all that kind of stuff. Jack Flaherty, I think we expect him to take the next step even next year. The second half, I mean, there's no reason why he can't be one of the top pitchers in baseball. You know, Miles Michaelis, we saw he's kind of hit or miss a little bit, you know, and there's another year of that. We'll see how that goes. You know, Dakota Hudson had a FIP of five. I feel like there's some regression that's going to come there. You know, if Wainwright comes back and isn't the Wainwright we saw last year, even a step down from that, I guess what I'm getting at is they're basing a lot of what they're doing on the fact that this pitching staff is going to be able to carry them and the offense will do a little better. The offense may get a little bit better, but there's a good chance that any increases in the offense could be offset by the, you know, a step back in the pitching staff. And then we're at the same place we were this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, it's, I would like some of that probably. I think they're probably banking. You know what? Here's the deal. This is where I frustrate myself with this one. Is I worry that they're already pigeonholing Helsley to be in the bullpen. Mm. And that, you know, we hear that there's going to be a rotation battle for that extra rotation spot and all kinds of stuff, but I'm not sure they feel that way. I don't know. That's some of the questions. Like, I personally, that's probably what I would do, is to go get a starter and maybe get one mid-level, because I just don't think you can ever have enough pitching, because we had the same conversation last year, and there were times where it's like, hey, where are these innings going to come from?
Well, we wanted them to trade for a fifth starter at the deadline.
I completely agree. Yeah, yeah, that's and I think that you know, there's a lot of names that they're banking on and don't want to block, and that's some of the issue that they've run into with the outfield right now. You know, they didn't want to block mm-hmm. them, but they ultimately did by not playing them enough. So you know, I know there's ways they can improve, and it's so nice to be able to do that from the catbird seat as, you know, the division champ, but it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those, I'm not bloodthirsty to go out and get something huge. I'm a huge fan of Rendon. I'm a big fan of Moustakas. Rendon's not going to happen. Moustakas is going to be he's a redundant player, because they're counting on a Moustakas type bounce back from Carpenter. As realistic as that may be, as unrealistic or realistic as that may be, I mean, that's what we're going to get. But there's enough. It's funny. Jeff Passan was just on with Bernie, and he made a point to where the likelihood of this happening is very low, because mm-hmm. he's either going to go back to Washington or going to go to the West Coast. He's going to play off each other at Strasburg. But those kind of names are out there for them to go get. And you talk about adding certainty in it quickly would be to add something, a guy like that.
Oh yeah, I've been a Strasburg fan since before he came into the league. So. Yeah. I would really love for them to go there. But I mean, I can't. I have been a proponent of the front office for a long time, and still am. I mean, I think it's a good front office. Don't get me wrong. But I can't in good conscience go out there and argue that they're going to spend the money because they just haven't done it. Uh-huh. I mean, yeah. You know, they might sign their own guys. You know, they did that with the Goldschmidt trade, but you know, they're much more likely to trade for somebody. And I think in my feeling is the cupboard's a little bare on that. I don't think you could, you know, you traded four pieces for Marcell Ozuna. You traded, you know, three pieces and two, you know, two really pretty good chips for Paul Goldschmidt. There's just not anybody down there in the minor leagues except for Dylan Carlson and Nolan Gorman who aren't likely to be traded. I think there are, you can see a situation where Gorman was, but it would then require them to go get a, like a Rendon or something, which again, probably not happening. But I can't, I mean, yeah, I think there are options on the free agent market that could be significant additions that would help them a lot. But like I said, I mean, you can't, you know, I'm not even sure that they would be players for a guy like Zach Wheeler, which is that guy that they were interested in at the trade deadline that's not going to play in the Cole Strasburg levels. But, you know, I just don't know that they go and spend on him. He's 30 years old and he costs money. And I think they would have traded for him last year. And then, you know, maybe if they could have signed him that way, but I don't think they'll go out and get him. Even though I still think that that's a chance that there's a really good chance he would help the rotation in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I think that, I think that the Cardinals are going to be risk averse to signing a guy that was offered the qualifying offer.
Oh yeah.
And I honestly think that they're going to, that they'll, I don't think that even changes if Ozuna walks where they gain a pick.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they're willing to do that. And that says a lot. It's funny because I was going to bring this up earlier. It's kind of 3 years in the making for me to kind of feel this way, but part of my enthusiasm with them playing the internal options is the fact that I don't have any positivity toward them going and spending on something significant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hope that makes sense. That it maybe can an apathetic view or an apathetic state of mind from me that, hey, let's just go with what they got so we don't have to worry about this all offseason or that there's no fake outrage when they don't sign anybody. That may be, you know, subliminally, right. That may be what I'm thinking. I don't know. But I'm completely in tune with you on the fact that I just don't see him doing it. And, you know, that's frustrating to a lot. It's not necessarily frustrating to me because my expectations aren't that high. But it is kind of one of those to where you're thinking, last year you knew that they had an abundance of pitching that they could go and make a trade. They honestly made a trade that they traded out of a level of redundancy in the players that went to Arizona. And I don't know if that even situation really exists right now for the Cardinals to do. You know, it definitely doesn't in the pitching. I mean, you and I are kind of proponents of them bringing somebody in, if that tells you anything. And we were at the deadline last year. And you've shown not to play any of the outfielders enough to where you're not going to get a major return back for them. So they're in a tough spot right now. And it's one of those things where I would much rather be in the spot after making the NLCS and winning your division than we have been the last couple of years. So that may add to my enthusiasm as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they had missed the playoffs this year and then said these kind of things, I'm not sure the stadium would still be standing. Yeah. Because that's the only buffer they really have is saying, look, this team did well. This team won, 91 games and went to the NLCS and got beat by the eventual world champions. I mean, they ran into what you could call almost a team of destiny.
Yeah.
It's also going to be the series that national fans will never actually remember when they look back on this because it was so anticlimactic. You know, they had to rally to win the wild card game and rally to win. They'll remember that game five against the Dodgers and they'll remember those games in the World Series. But they'll like, who did we play in the middle? It's kind of like 2011. I feel like we sometimes forget about the Brewers. You know, we talk about the Philly series and how that was dramatic, but of course the World Series. And that Milwaukee series was kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was better. You know, it went six games that game, that series, six. And there were some interesting moments in that, but I think if you look back, you forget it. I just don't think the National fans are going to think too much about that Cardinals series, but that's completely a different rabbit trail. It feels a lot like they're saying, hey, this team was this good. And you could make an argument. You can make an argument it could be a better team. I mean, obviously, if that team hits, if that team can hit even to averages for most people, they might be a World Series team. But you also got to know that some things just went right. I mean, you go from last to first in errors. I know that's not the best margin, but still, it's something. That's how dramatically good your defense got better. You got to feel like they're going to take a little bit of a step back next year. I mean, they'll still be good, but they may be league leading, but that, you know, they're still, it's not going to have that kind of, you're not gonna have that kind of improvement. I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit of resting on laurels, and
you know what? It's one of those situations where I completely agree with you. And there's two reasons. A, they're going to be a year older. And B, one of the major components of having a good defense, honestly, he may not play center field much next year. You know, I know that it's
right.
I'm not so certain they feel that way, but it could happen.
Oh, agree. I mean, I think it's come. You know, if it's Harrison Bader, as Derek Gould said about Colton Wong, and I think he's probably said about Bader too, a little bit at the mercy of his teammates, because if everybody else hits, they can let Bader be out there and play defense and bat eights and not worry about it. But if nobody, you know, if the offense is struggling, he can't play. It's kind of like, you know, Jose Martinez can't play if they need defense, but as soon as they're struggling with offense, you know, like the last two games of the NLCS, they don't worry about it. They put him out there. So, yeah, I think he, you know, Bader's got, and you know, with Carlson being able to play center field with guys like, well, I mean, what, Arozarena and Lane Thomas, and you know, maybe even Tyler O'Neill. I don't know if Tyler O'Neill could play to Bader's level, but the other guys, they're got a chance to be maybe not Harrison Bader defense, but not far off of it, and bring a whole lot more of a bat. So you got to think, you know, at some point in time, that calculus is going to have to be made. But I think what worries us as well is there's a real good chance that the starting lineup, depending on who's on opening day, depending on who they're facing, has Bader at center and Carpenter at third and Fowler in right. And you got to hope that this is a new year for those guys. And it may be another month or 2 months before we really decide it's, you know, if it's not a good, if it's not a new year, if they're back to those normals, we're going to lose 2 months finding out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm almost geared up for that now. There's an element to me that if everyone's healthy, which the guys that I'm getting ready to talk about, that doesn't happen very often. I wonder how far off we are from seeing a situation to where next year's starting outfield may be, or for opening day, maybe O'Neill, Thomas, and Edmund. And the reason I say Edmund is just because I think he's going to be probably at five different positions, but be in the lineup every day.
Mm.
That's kind of how I feel it may be going. I think that you can read the tea leaves and actually even hear Mo talk, that Thomas probably would have played a much bigger factor down the stretch if he would have been healthy. And that's pretty intriguing to me. I kind of feel like they need to see what he can do. I have spent all the end of last season and a lot of all of the season, 2019 season, thinking that O'Neill's time was probably done. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know. Whenever I heard Mo and Bernie earlier this week, and he made the comment of, someone with 600 at-bats, you're going to see a lot of strikeouts. You're going to see not many walks, but you may see 35 home runs. For a team that's power-starved, I can see him getting a pretty strong look in Ozuna's spot for the early part of the season.
You know, I agree with you. And I want to say, the time, I'm pulling it up right now to see what the numbers actually were, but he got consistent play in July last year because I forgot who was hurt. I don't know if that was when was. Yeah, I think it was. I think it was Ozuna Singer, and he played pretty much the whole the month of July.
Right?
Got 23 starts. Or got 23 games, 21 starts. He hit .301. He only hit four homers in 88 plate appearances, but you know, he struck out 22 times. That's going to happen. But what, you know, I mean, and that's time. He hit three.
Daniel, check how many doubles he had.
So he really didn't have the, you know, his slugging was 482 over that stretch, which is still, you know, better than a lot of what was going on. It's maybe not to the level that you would thought for Tyler O'Neill, but you know, you're right. I mean, he did not play down the stretch at all, even at times where it felt like he could. And there are so many other options. I mean, I just don't know. I just don't see how. I don't see how the Cardinals can go into next year with Dexter Fowler, Harrison Bader, Lane Thomas, Randy Arozarena, Tyler O'Neill, all being, you know, with the idea that Tommy Edman's going to play out there some, all being on the major league roster, because they all kind of need to be, right? And none of those guys need to be spending significant time in Memphis. And then you're looking at Dylan Carlson, you know, knocking on the door, perhaps pounding on the door, depending on what kind of spring training he has. I just don't, you know, for as much as, now again, the Cardinals may trade Tyler O'Neill for two pitching prospects that we never hear from, just to clear up the, you know, which would be a bit of a waste, but it would free up some of this logjam. Mm-hmm. And it could be that they go into spring training with all these guys and then try to trade then. But I don't know. We've talked a lot so often. I mean, you mentioned it just earlier about how they stockpile these guys, and it just feels like that bill is coming due. There's not any place to put them because, you know, Randy Arozarena does not need to spend much of next year at Memphis at all. I mean, we saw he did a great job in Memphis. He needs to have some time at the major league level, but how do you do that? I don't know. I feel like, and you know, I just don't know how they manage this stuff. And I'm afraid that it's going to come back and bite them a little bit.
It may very well happen. I don't, it's odd. Like, the Cardinals are so odd anyway. Is the reason I asked about doubles is I didn't realize they were near the bottom in doubles too.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? That's, you didn't have any power at all. And that a lot of that probably had to do with Carpenter. You know, I mean, he hit 40, you know, the year before. But you know, Goldschmidt didn't, not a ton. I mean, since we've had some of the internet issues, I really don't want to do a lot of searching. but yeah, I mean, the O'Neill foul or O'Neill power intrigues me the most. But then when you make your point of, hey, we have all these other guys and you have two of them that have the hit tool to where they don't strike out, in Thomas and Arozarena, that are a little bit better, you're thinking, well, is that maybe more than what they need? You know, I don't know. It's funny that I do wonder, and I bring this up all the time when we do these off-season shows and in spring, how much of these competitions are already decided? You know, as of right now, we hear that center field's open, but is center field going to be open when Bader doesn't perform? Right. You know, does that make sense? I mean, like someone's going to actually have to make a super impression,
right,
to get that.
Yeah, ball. The finger is on the scale for Bader. I mean, somebody's going to take it from him.
Okay, good. That's well put, and that's kind of what I kind of wonder a little bit. There's, you know, one of the things that concerns me too is I don't like the time pass will probably help a little bit, but you know, Thomas is coming back from knee injury that zaps power, you know, for usually about a year, and that may hurt him a little bit. But yeah, it's crazy the situation that they're in, to where, you know, you look and from the outside looking in, you're thinking, man, they have five or six guys that can play, to where we're looking for a little bit of certainty for those two or three guys that can play. I will say this, and I mean it. I was really high on Fowler because you know how I feel about Fowler. The tool that he has is beneficial, and the fact that He takes great at-bats and he walks. Well, for the last 6 weeks of the season, he did not do that. And you could tell that their offense really struggled when he did it. So you just wonder if that's the situation to where are they finally going to lead off Wong? Is Edmund going to be their leadoff guy? Are these going to be the table setters? You know, I probably couldn't argue that much because I just don't know if Fowler's the answer anymore. And we kind of knew that this may happen toward the end of the contract. But, you know, speaking of your teammates making you look a little bit worse, Carpenter bottoming out last year after the extension almost makes Fowler look just as bad, if that makes any sense. You know, and you're just like, now you look like you have a couple of black holes there. And that's it's not the situation that you really want to see. And so where people may say that you, man, you have five or six guys that may contribute, where the two of us are like, hey, we just want to see two of them contribute, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that really boils down to what we're seeing is the Cardinals are banking on quantity and other teams are banking on quality. I mean, they think at least that it's worth having, you know, two all-star, for example, maybe two aces at the head of your rotation and an iffy fifth guy versus a whole bunch of threes. Which is, I mean, I'm not saying that Jack Flair, I'm just, you know what I'm saying. It's just that general idea that the Cardinals have a lot of good to pretty good, you know, to, you know, above average maybe players, but they don't have the stars, and it doesn't help you to have six good outfielders when you can't play them all. You know, if you could have two great outfielders and one maybe below average one would probably do you better at times and maybe overall than having three, you know, slightly above average ones. And that's what we've seen. I mean, you know, the Cardinals had no all-stars this year until, you know, the commissioner put Paul DeJong on the thing. you know, if anybody was going to be elected, it was probably going to be Yadier Molina. And that was mainly on name recognition, not necessarily. I mean, Yadi's still pretty good for a 37, 38 year old catcher, but he's not necessarily, you know, a superstar. And that's what, you know, of course, that goes back to our whole conversations from last year with Bryce Harper, that this team kind of needs one. And they thought they were getting that with Paul Goldschmidt, but maybe he will, but you hate to see the first year of the contract, of a five-year contract for a guy that's already past 30, look, you know, like basically his career worst, you know, because that doesn't give you a whole lot of confidence for the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's one of those. I'm a little bit bullish on a bounce back from him. And to be honest with you, I kind of feel that way about Carpenter as well. Not to where he's going to get back to, you know, 40 double level, but I feel like he's going to be a pretty productive player to where I think that you're going to be okay. But they're at a spot to where they don't necessarily have to be okay. They can go up and out. They can go out and upgrade, and they're choosing not to because of the situation that they're in with having, like you said, the quantity over quality issue to where they're trying to find the quality out of what they have. And we just don't, I just don't know if it's there, but that also could be one of those that we browbeat them. We watch them every night, you know, which could be a good thing or a bad thing in this situation. So they could actually use some star power, you know, regardless of how it looks and where it comes from. And that's where I kind of, during the presser, it was a quickly shot down of fans kind of losing interest because the team may be a little bit boring. And I thought that was pretty telling about how defensive, you know, DeWitt too was about it. You know, he was with a quick no. And I don't know if that's true because even I get bored watching them. You know what I mean? And I'm kind of an apologist for them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they talk about I think the term he used was enthused. I mean, I get that Twitter's not your best gauge for that because there's a lot of people that are happy about a team that are not on Twitter. You know, a lot of, you know, especially in baseball in general, older fan base, you know, may not be online as much or whatever. But, and I'm not saying you make decisions because, you know, a lot of people are screaming on Twitter. That's a terrible idea. But they're an enthused team doesn't have empty seats in the playoffs, in the stands. for whatever reason. I'm not saying that there's not explanations for that, but I also understand that 5 years ago, it didn't matter what time the game started. It didn't matter if it was the last minute, the place filled up. I think that we saw a whole lot of empty seats during the season. I mean, I know those seats were sold, and for, you know, for purposes of the team, they don't necessarily care if you're there or not. You've got your ticket for this. They don't get your concession info, but, and I just, there's not a connection with this team. There's not an excitement about this team that we've seen in the past. And I'm not, you know, again, it's probably a little bit overblown about how the fan base is reacting to this team negatively, but it is not an enthused situation. And that makes you concerned about how in touch the ownership and the management are with the fan base, and what it's going to take for them to understand what's going on with the fan base. I don't know. You're right. That was really interesting for him to say that and very quickly. You know, if he had said, well, you know, we get that there's reasons and all this kind of stuff, but we think that the fans are still happy with what things, the product we're putting out there. That's one thing. But yeah, I think that we've seen that this fan base is not necessarily enthused. And part of that is, like you said, they've gotten stagnant, and it's good. Again, they broke out of it. They went to the playoffs this year. That's great. But it's difficult to say right now that that's a trending up versus just a outlier.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right, we had some technical issues right here, and so instead of trying to pick up from that rant that I had about Bill DeWitt's use of the word enthused, we're going to go forward from here and talk a little bit about, for the next little bit, maybe about how these players can actually, what the likelihood is that these players are going to rebound. If we're going to see an improvement out of Carpenter, if we can continue to see improvement out of Fowler, Alan, again, it feels like a lot of next season kind of rides on Matt Carpenter, not necessarily going back to MVP level, but at least, you know, somewhat in that range, somewhere more like the Matt Carpenter that we're used to. What's your feel? Is he going to be able to do that?
You know, I think that, here's what's funny is I felt like Fowler had a productive season for him, and I thought that he was beneficial at the top of the lineup. I felt like the lineup took off when he started to when he fully took over as the leadoff hitter, and I felt like that changed the trajectory of how they were where they were going. But then when you look at the numbers, and he didn't have that much better of a season than he did the year before, and I'm not. I don't know what that means. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if my expectations of him were so high that I wanted to see him do well, that anything beneficial, I was like, okay, cool. This will work out. Now, I kind of feel the same way about Fowler, to where any bounce back that we see is going to be a beneficial bounce back. And you know, that he's going to be a middle of the lineup presence you know, kind of be back to similar to what he was. What worries me is about that is when you draw out, you know, the full season, you know, where it was like mid-season this year when you could go in what would be a, you know, a 162-game schedule, that the numbers weren't that good outside of a couple of big months. That's concerning to me. But, you know, I do think that you have to count on some sort of bounce back from him, because you're paying him And that's a situation that I think that's where things get scary to how they've done. Do I think he'll be a beneficial part of the lineup next year? I just hope they're not expecting 35 doubles and 25 homers, because I just don't know if you're going to get that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know either. I just pull it up. I haven't, until recently, not been big on using Baseball Savant. I just haven't ever used it, but I've started playing around with it. So now I'm dangerous because I've got numbers that I don't understand. I was just looking at Dexter Fowler to start with. And looking at some of the StatCast numbers for Fowler, they're not that much different than 2018. His exit velocity is actually a tick lower in 2019. he struck out at a higher percentage. His hard hit rate is just a slightly bit better. Some things like that, you know, and again, Dexter Fowler was much better than 18 last year, or at least on the field. He wasn't necessarily good. I mean, he was still slightly below average overall. My fear is for Fowler, especially looking at these numbers and seeing what we're seeing, that we're going to see a bit of a slide back, and that 2020 may be a combination of those 2 years of 18 and 19, which is not acceptable at all. For Carpenter, boy, you're right. I mean, you know, we've talked about it all year. I mean, starting at September of last year, or really at the end of August going forward, the numbers weren't good. You look at, you know, he didn't hit the ball very well. I mean, overall, I like to think that there's a bounce back in that. You know, I could think that he could probably be a, 105 OPS plus or something like that next year, which would be above average. But it's hard for me to see a return to what we've seen out of Matt Carpenter. I mean, he's 34. It feels like a guy that just overall, you know what I'm saying? He may step off that cliff. Hopefully not. You know, hopefully we're looking back and he can get back to where he was. But, I mean, before this last year, he was OPS plus of 120 or better pretty much every year. The 1 year he wasn't was 2014, where he was 112. I don't know. I don't know if he can get to 110, 120. We're used to seeing him at 135, 140, and it just does not feel at all like he can return to those levels. And, you know, maybe they don't need him to. Maybe, you know, just a bounce back there, a full year of Edmund, bounce backs here and there, it'll be that. But, boy, again, it's kind of go back to what we were talking about. They're just feels like they're relying on a whole lot of ifs.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, you know, whenever he came back, he did hit the ball hard, quite a bit harder toward the end of the season, I think. Now, here's what's funny. Last year, I honestly felt, and I thought it was clear, I thought it was evident that he was caught in between of trying to be the power hitter that we've seen or trying to hit the spray hitter that he probably should be because of the shifts on him. And I felt like that was an issue, you know, because I felt like there was a lot of times you felt like he was just trying to lift the ball to left field because there was no one there, couldn't do it, played into the hands of the defense, to where I honestly felt like Matt Carpenter's a lot better when he's trying to hit it over the shift. You know, I think that you should sell out and pull. Well, Mo said the exact opposite, said that, hey, yes, he was in between, and that they feel like that caused some of the regression last year, but they feel like he's going to be better when he gets back to this things that he did at the beginning of his career, to where he is spraying the ball a little bit more. And that is concerning to me, because I think that you could probably live with Carpenter with the ability to see as many pitches as he can and sell out for home runs. And I feel like when he's pulling the ball over the shift is when he's at his best. And that's what kind of concerns me, that we're going to have another season of him being in between the whole, being in between all year, or we're not going to get the OPS type numbers that I think the Cardinals need. If right now he's probably penciled in as your cleanup hitter, and that that's a scary proposition. It's a scary proposition whenever you're looking to drive in runs. So I don't know. I mean, I think that you are going to have a bounce back. I really do. But I just don't know how much, how high that bounce back is going to be.
And it, maybe it boils down to, you know, looking at his batted ball profile here, he hit 34.5% ground balls this year, which is the highest he's had since 2015. And that's, you know, that's, you know, ground balls are less likely to get through. I mean, that just boils down to, especially when he's not hitting them that hard. Let's see, what's his exit velocity on the year was 87.2, which is 2 miles per hour less than it was last year, and at least a mile per hour lower than it's been since 2015. So he's hitting the ball softer and he's hitting it on the ground, and that's, you know, not a good combination. So, you know, maybe it is just enough of getting a little bit more lift on things, getting a little bit more of a line drives. Although his line down rate has been pretty consistent over the last 3 years. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I just I think I would feel better if the Cardinals came out and said, it's even if it's not Carpenter or Fowler or any of these guys, look, we understand, we kind of see what Jeff Albert was trying to do, and we understand how we can adjust that. You know, we understand, you know, Matt Carpenter hit on the ground. I know that I'll come out in details, but he hit on the ground because of X, you know, and we know we can, we've watched some video. We know, we feel like we've got a plan to attack that. And maybe they do. They probably do. I'm sure that Jeff Albert has ideas on how to fix these guys, but I think it would just be a little bit more more optimistic for us if there was some sort of basis for this idea that Matt Carpenter is going to get better, versus what it feels like right now is, well, Matt Carpenter's always been good, so of course he's going to get better. And that's,
yeah,
that's hard to swallow.
Sure. Sure. I completely agree. And that's, these two are going to be hand in hand until they're not. Is, I feel the exact same way about Fowler. I was like, you know what, his, the tool that he has that I like a lot is the fact of his ability to get on base. But man, he was not a fear factor at all toward the end of the season. And that could have been the fatigue, that you never know. But I just don't, there wasn't a lot of authority at the top of the lineup. And that's a scary, it's a scary idea that they're banking on those guys to have such a bounce back that they're going to drive in a ton of runs and whatnot. And I completely agree with you. The belief's just not there. It's kind of a mystery, and it's kind of a, hey, these guys are good and that's where they're going to be. And I just don't see it.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm sure they've got some ideas. And I do think that after another year of going with Jeff Albert and getting into the off season, because I got to feel like it's got to be difficult for these guys to just on the fly to some degree. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and we said that last year. I completely agree. The work in progress deal, I completely buy in on that. I was just like, there's no way we're going to see the improvements or anything substantial just by meeting these guys in spring training. I didn't think it would be that much different. So I agree with that. I do buy into that quite a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, I know they worked with someone went back to his ranch last year, but still, it was, you know, an off season. Now they've had a whole year. They understand, hopefully understand the concepts. They understand, and we'll see how many are buying into it too. I mean, Mark Saxon had the article not too long ago about how some of those guys were not still, you know, like Dexter or like Harrison Bader felt like he was more of a gut guy, gut feel guy. Got to, you know, how it feels. What you can do if you're not hitting 200, you know, but you're hitting 200, 220, you probably better listen to the hitting coach, I guess, a little bit more. I hope that that's the case. And hopefully that will, I mean, the Cardinals are putting down a huge marker on Jeff Albert. I mean, they're clearing out hitting coaches, they're revamping philosophy. And this is something that may take a few years to really know. I'm going to be honest. If the Cardinals hit like they did this year, I still don't think Jeff Albert gets fired. I think that they're willing to commit 2 or 3 or 4 years to this idea before they scrap it, because they are doing such an overhaul of their whole system to benefit for this. So, you know, for those that are thinking, well, Jeff Albert, you know, they won't hit. I think he's there for a couple of years, and Hopefully it works. It should work. I mean, it really feels like it's in line with the way baseball is going. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But I just kind of wish that I wish they'd give us a little bit more solid reasons versus just, you know, trust us. We know what we're doing.
Sure. The, you know, and it's one of those to where Shield has shown that they came in. I knew this wouldn't take very long in the press conference, by the way, but to show that, like, hey, we improved from the bottom of the league in defense and base running to the top of the league. You need, we now deserve a little more patience to try to do that offensively, you know, and that took like 5 minutes to get into in the press conference. And you knew that was coming. You and I talked about that on here. I want to throw something out hypothetically. And I know that it's one of those to where this is just throwing stuff against the wall with Hicks having I'm talking about the center fielder Hicks with the Yankees, with him blowing out his elbow, and being down. Can you imagine what Harrison Bader would look like in that lineup, where all he has to do is defend with all that power surrounding him?
Yeah, I mean, that would be great.
I wonder if that's not a phone call that doesn't get made.
I mean, maybe. Could be interesting to see if they would do that. But, you know, again, you're going to be selling as low as possible on Harrison Bader. You know, his defense was about normal, but his offense tanked. And as you know, there was a great article. We've talked about it before, but there's a good article at Viva Alberto's this week. How, you know, basically, if you throw him a fastball, he'll crush it. If you throw him anything else, he's not hitting it. And the league's figuring that out. It doesn't take very long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was figured out. There's no tell. I mean, you can see that. Yeah. There were more. I'm more concerned. I will say this, and I mean, I'm also an apologist for the guy. I think fatigue played a huge factor with the young. Where I think that game plan played a huge factor with Bader.
I agree with the young to an extent. You know, I'm working on my exit interviews series, and I've written his just a couple days ago. I need to do more of them. But yeah, you know, I'm looking at that, and from May 1st on. He hit 202. But that start, I mean, in May, he hit like 200. And fatigue shouldn't be setting in May. Now, I agree, by the end of the year, it really looked like he was gassed completely.
He was getting beat on pitches on balls that he usually drove. Yeah. I have no doubt in my mind about that.
But I don't think we could just completely write off. You know what I'm saying? I think there's a little bit more to that.
But no, I completely agree, though. But are we writing off a guy that had 30 doubles and 30 home runs and was in the Gold Glove competition? You know what I'm saying? I think that's what you're going to get. And his walk rate was up and his strikeout rate was down. I mean, it's one of those situations where I feel like that was more indicative of the player he is than, you know, I don't know. I think that we're going to look at some of these situations to where he's going to be a victim of the entire lineup being terrible as well.
Well, and that's it. I mean, there's value to what Paul DeJong brought last year. I mean, like you said, 30 homers, 30 doubles. There were times where it was tough. I mean, you knew that. You know, especially late in the year, there was situations where Paul DeJong came up and you just knew they're going to strike out.
It was just that.
But overall, I'm not saying get rid of Paul DeJong by any means.
Sure, no. I agree. I knew what you meant. I completely agree.
You know, I mean, if for some reason the Cardinals wanted to trade for Francisco Lindor, then sure. But I don't think that happened either. Even though that seems to be maybe the big cause that people are starting to grab around now this year. But that's. That's just not going to happen. There's not enough. I don't think the Cardinals have enough to get Lindor from the Indians.
And they don't have enough to do it for a guy that you only have for 2 years, essentially, as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of that. At least it's more than 1 year. But,
yeah.
You know, and then they'd have to spend the money to keep him, which, you know, again, you know, you get into the one, they signed their players, and two, there's money coming off the books pretty soon. You know, Fowler's going to come off soon. Contract. Is done after this coming year, although they may extend him, it probably won't be at a $20 million rate. You know, Carpenter's got another, you know, couple years. So if you talk yourself into it, you say they trade for him and then they, you know, extend him, spend some of that money that they're not going to have, that they're getting off the books. Again, I just don't think it's happening, yeah. But I can see that.
No, I agree. If I'm going to throw out a sneaky name of a guy that I think that is probably attainable, but I'm not so sure that he's the upgrade at shortstop, but he would be to the lineup. I'm going to throw out Corey Seager.
Huh.
Because I think that there's going to be some changes in LA, and I think that the guys are going to be available. And that's just a name that sticks out to me. Now, I'm saying this because I think there's going to be availability. I do not feel like the Cardinals are going to do something like that. But I just understand if they were going to upgrade from a strength, I think that that's a name that may get thrown around a little bit.
That'd be interesting. I mean, he is a younger player that has some. But again, though, like you said, unless you trade DeYoung or you move him to third base permanently, which then opens the whole Carpenter Edmund issue. Anybody is going to be. I mean, they got to get somebody that can back him up. That's the biggest thing. If Edmund can do it, great. But they can let him do it.
I get the feeling that I don't know why. I think that you could probably even get a Seager and play him at third base because I think his body type is going to probably play at third before it's all said and done anyway. Now, Gavin Lux may have a lot to do with that in L.A. as well. I'm not sure. I just have a feeling that they're going to be in on Rendon and or Lindor heavy because I think that the Dodgers are just close. They feel like they're wasting it and they're going to do something big this offseason.
Maybe so. And again, you know, that's part of the issue. I mean, as much as we'd love to get Rendon and obviously the Cardinals should do for a guy like that. You make it happen.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if, you know, third base wasn't something that they've already, for better or worse, have issues with, you know, I mean, they've got Carpenter. Where else is he going to play? Cause I don't believe any of this Carpenter's going to play outfield stuff. And you know, are you going to split it with Carpenter and Edmund? I mean, again, if you actually wanted to get Rendon, you could make everything else work. Carpenter could be that bench bat and you just have to deal with it. But that's completely not the way the Cardinals operate. So yeah. It's a situation where they say, well, we've got enough pieces here and we're already paying people. So why should we do that? And it's almost too bad. Like last year, there was kind of that, you know, you could make an argument for a gap at the outfield, or you definitely had that gap at first base. And that's why they went out and got Goldschmidt. There's not just that obvious gap that you could do something about. I mean, you know, if you're starting Fowler in right field, you can say, well, they need to do something with Fowler. Yeah, that's great, but he's got 2 years and a contract can't be moved. Although I did see an interesting idea of moving him to the Angels because of Joe Madden being out there now. And that, I mean, again, I don't know that you could get much for him. And even if you just got him out there for, you know, contract relief. But if you could do something like that, you know, I like Dexter Fowler, but I wonder if that wouldn't be a good situation for everybody.
Sure. I mean, and that's one of those to where I feel the same way. I'm a big fan of Fowler just from the Tulsa days and everything. And I've never been one to beat up on him. I mean, that would be one of those to where you could almost see them paying for him not to play for you as being a benefit. You know, and that sounds awful.
Yeah.
But I know where you're going with that. And back to the Carpenter deal, I can only see two other positions that Carpenter could play, and one of those is called the Texas Rangers, and one of those is the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of how I feel where this would go. If they were to go to him and say, okay, I have a feeling this theory was completely blown out of the water by the things that Mo said during the press conference about how they're counting on him to come back and all kinds of stuff. And I think that there would probably be talk of, hey, we could probably upgrade at several positions. I don't think this was GM talk. In other words, I think the Carpenter's a member of the club, but I thought that there may be a situation where they would go to him and said, okay, hey, you're going to have to earn your bats. You're going to have to do this. Or would you rather us go and ask around a little bit and to see what kind of interest there was for you in another place to go and maybe refresh, however you want to say it. I don't think that was the conversation that was had. I think that was more of a, hey, work on this because we need you to be a big member of this team. But with that being said, I kind of thought that those were two landing spots that I figured that you could probably get done because, well, A, you can play him at third base and DH in Texas and in Kansas City. That's a fairly marquee name that for a rebuilding team that can DH in third base and first base for you and be beneficial and play for Matheny. But I just don't think that's going to happen. So that the Fowler deal, that would be intriguing. And it's one of those to where, like I said, you could probably get away with eating a little bit of that money for him not to play for you, and it'd be a benefit to the club, to the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument for that for sure. I agree.
About the
Angels' outfield situation, except they've got a pretty tolerable center fielder, from what I understand. But you know, I don't know if that's even a reasonable idea, but it would be, you know, again, just situationally, it's a situation where I could see Dex waiving his no trade clause for that.
Yeah.
For a guy that he knows well in a situation that he's close to home. But
yeah, that's what I was going to say. 3 hours from Vegas probably makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've gone on plenty of it's ironic. We you know, again, we're complaining about this team that went to the championship series, but it just feels like there's more they can do. There's more that they're going to need to do. I don't know what they're going to do. But, you know, hopefully, you know, who knows? They might surprise us. They've done it before. They are an organization that keeps things kind of close to the chest. And we'll see how that goes. Unless something strange happens, like we'll probably not do a show next week. And we'll be back at you the 22nd and do that one. That'll probably be our last Friday morning show as the holidays are coming around and then my schedule changes. But we'll be back then. We'll see if Marcelo Zuna accepts the qualifying offer, which would pretty much mean that would pretty much blow payroll completely. I don't think they've planned for Marcelo Zuna to do that. Don't think he will, but we'll know that by time next time we do a show. And until next time, that is Alan. I'm Daniel. Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!